Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and New York Magazine politics reporter Chris Smith has a new book that's an oral history of The Daily Show, as told by Jon Stewart, staff members, and guests. Hi, Chris. Welcome back to WNYC.
Good morning, Brian. Thank you for having me.
Why an oral history of The Daily Show?
We tried it as a musical theatrical production, and
it just bombed in New Haven.
Didn't work.
So you quote Jon Stewart saying, "Everything we did was an attempt to move the show toward active pursuit with a point of view about material we could get our hands on instead of being passive and reactive." Talk about this active pursuit.
Yeah, and to backtrack and answer your first question a little more seriously, it's an oral history because across certainly Jon Stewart's 16-plus years and the 20 years or so of the life of the show, it's employed just a staggering number of smart, funny people. And the story is best told in their own words because they're really interesting folks. The on-camera one's a whole lot more famous than the off-camera, but the off-camera shaped the show in intriguing ways. Jon came on board after three or so years of Craig Kilborn as host when it was very much a parody of local news TV broadcasts and a lot.
Late 90s, we're talking,
exactly.
Right?
Jon debuted in January 99. And it's interesting, he did not have a master plan. He did not have a blueprint at that point. He knew he wanted it to be more relevant, more focused on the things he cared about in the world. And then he was given a gift somewhat in the 2000 election. And the light bulb went off. They did a series of pieces, particularly John McCain allowing Steve Carell to get on the Straight Talk Express in New Hampshire. And Steve Carell asks John McCain a question that just freezes him.
We have that clip. We pulled that one as representative of the book because you highlighted as a pivotal point for the formation of what The Daily Show became. So Steve Carell asked McCain a hardball question about unauthorized appropriations and then quickly takes it back by saying he didn't even know what that question meant. Here's a 45-second clip of their exchange.
"You are welcome on our bus at any time.
Let's do a lightning round.
Okay.
Your favorite book?
For Whom the Bell Tolls.
Favorite movie?
Viva Zapata.
Charlton Heston.
Marlon Brando.
Close enough.
If I were a tree, I would be a root. What does that mean?
Senator, how do you reconcile the fact that you were one of the most vocal critics of pork barrel politics, and yet, while you were chairman of the Commerce Committee, that committee set a record for unauthorized appropriations? I'm just kidding. I don't even know what that means.
So, first of all, right on its face, it mocks the trivial lightning round question convention that's grown up in the media with respect to presidential candidates when the time could be used in better ways.
Exactly. It in a 4-second silence, it strips away a whole lot of spin and artifice. And that became the tone that Jon tried, the point of view and tone that Jon tried to impart in every segment they did in the studio, in the field. He talked to me a great deal about how every year they would have congressional press secretaries come up to the Daily Show office and sit down with him and ask, well, you know, how should Senator X or Representative Y, you know, what should they say on your show to really come across well? And Jon would say, maybe they should just talk like human beings and tell us what they think. And, you know, to flip back to your previous guests who were arguing a lot about philosophy and political theory and strategy, that became a central theme of The Daily Show with Jon Stewart. You know, where has politics gotten off the rails and how can we get it back to actual reality?
And that exchange with John McCain, when he, remember, was running for president in 2000, ended up being the first time The Daily Show was mentioned in a political piece in the New York Times.
Yeah, and the beauty and difficulty of that moment, as Ben Carlin, who at the time was head writer, went on to become an executive producer, then helped create Modern Family. Ben talked to me about how, you know, they exposed McCain at that second in a way that the conventional media had not and would not subsequently. But they have to pull back and go back to comedy because they're not set up really as a gotcha news organization, with both the beauty and the weakness of The Daily Show in a lot of ways.
But then I think somebody talks about The Daily Show shifting, maybe as a result of that moment, from using parody to satire.
Exactly.
Is that an important distinction?
Hugely important. You know, rather than just making fun. And comedy was always central. You know, I keep feeling like as I talk about the book, the deadliest way to take the comedy out of things is to try to explain it. And there really is a lot of funny stuff in the book, folks. Mm-hmm. I promise you. But yes, shifting to satire, shifting to what, in John's words, do we think here? What is the point we are trying to make with this piece as we interview someone who's, railing against gay penguins in the Central Park Zoo? Or as John Oliver is going to Australia to highlight how they did gun control correctly and how that simply won't work in the United States.
You mentioned Ben Carlin, the first head writer and then executive producer, and he's quoted saying, "I felt the media loved the show because it was about them." Of course, so much of it was about unmasking them and skewering them, as in that lightning round sequence with John McCain.
Yeah, that's an interesting, subtext or sub-narrative or whatever you want to call it. You know, initially the mainstream press was very much amused and flattered by The Daily Show's attention, and then things turned a bit over the years. But a really interesting segment of that is John's relationship with Fox News. I talked to James Poniewozik, who's a really smart TV critic over the years for Time magazine, now at the New York Times, who said, you know, in the early 2000s, people kind of accepted Fox News as fair and balanced. Oh, maybe they were a little to the right. And if not for The Daily Show saying, oh, no, no, they are a propaganda operation, the view of Fox News might not have changed as quickly. Mm. And it's important, I think, as people analyze Trump now, you know, there's a lot going on, of course, but he doesn't come out of a vacuum. And one of the things The Daily Show and John talked a lot about over the years was how 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, conservative talk radio, Fox News has been pumping this stuff into the political cultural atmosphere.
And one of the most iconic moments for John actually came off The Daily Show when he went on CNN, which he had been skewering on a regular basis for things like that, as a guest on Crossfire in 2004. We played this clip, a version of this clip, and talked about it a lot at the time. But here's a clip of the exchange. This is just a short bit of what went on for a few minutes, where they were trying to get Jon Stewart to be funny, kind of be a funny liberal. And he said, "I'm not going to be your monkey." And
you're doing theater when you should be doing debate, which would be great.
It's not honest.
What you do is not honest. What you do is partisan hackery. And I'll tell you why I know
it. You on your show, and you sniff his throne, and you're accusing us of partisan hackery?
Absolutely.
You've got to be kidding, man.
You're on CNN. The show that leads into me is puppets making crank phone calls. What is wrong with you?
And by the way, Crossfire was taken off the air 4 months after that appearance.
Yeah, interestingly, in talking to John about that whole episode, he regrets it in some ways. His intention was not to go on there and blow up their show. It became much more of a flashpoint than he intended. He doesn't regret anything he said. His points are right on target or very much what he believes. But the effect on those guys and on Crossfire was not – he blames it on low blood sugar.
But he also walked a line. I wonder what he would think, actually, of what CNN did all through this presidential campaign. Because Crossfire
can tell you that.
Doesn't exist anymore. But, you know, there would be panels of people every night on Anderson Cooper and Don Lemon who were – Clinton supporters and Trump supporters and some analysts thrown in there, and they would be firing at each other. And, you know, post-election, that's come under a lot of scrutiny and head-scratching as to whether it served a public purpose.
Yeah. You know, the shows are not called Crossfire anymore, but the substance and style have in many ways not changed. I talked to John a lot over the past year as the campaign was unfolding. He doesn't miss being at The Daily Show. The grind took a hell of a lot out of him. He misses the people. But, yeah, all throughout the campaign, he was appalled as a civilian, not so much by those shows, but about a lot of the mainstream press, you know, mainstream press, CNN at the top of the list in the TV category, just giving uncritical hours and hours attention to Trump rallies. There's a fascinating little anecdote. I talked to Jeff Zucker.
Which is a different thing than those panels,
I have to
say.
I talked to Jeff Zucker, and this is, you know, alternative reality or what if. Jeff Zucker, the head of CNN, offered John a job when John was leaving The Daily Show. Said, come on, CNN, do whatever you like. You know, it's fun or painful to think about if John had accepted that, which he was never going to do, being on CNN through the campaign, ripping CNN's coverage. But
yeah,
another world.
Did he regret, it sounds like not, leaving the show? And I guess he left it specifically at the time that he left it so that he didn't have to engage in the 2016 presidential campaign. And, of course, it turned out to be, you know, maybe the most historic campaign in campaign terms of any of our lifetimes.
No, he doesn't regret it. He's, over the course of 16 years, said what he had to say, did his job as he felt as well as he possibly could, was physically burned out.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he talked to me, as he had not to others anywhere else, about how for most of those 16 years, not that he's asking for sympathy, but he had brutal insomnia. He left the show. He sleeps really well now. I mean, he's lost weight. His blood pressure has dropped.
Huh.
You know, as a civilian, he's incredibly pained by what we've gone through and will go through probably in the next several years.
We're almost out of time, but he did try to have it both ways in a certain respect, because he was being a news source for so many people in a way that, you know, I personally think was extremely useful for our democracy because of the way the straight media was failing, and also just because his style and Colbert's style were able to engage a lot of young adults who otherwise weren't getting their heads around the news at all.
Yeah. And Dan.
But when he went on CNN that time and at other times that he was asked, he was like, oh, I'm doing a comedy show.
Well,
please don't.
No, actually, he never said that. And he said consistently, I take responsibility for everything I've said. Uh-huh. I am a comedian. A comedy comes first, but I care and I'm serious about all these points.
Right.
And it's interesting. Dan Bacadal, a former correspondent, talked to me about how he didn't think Bernie Sanders would be possible if not for 16 years of Jon Stewart.
Wow.
Jon Stewart educated a generation in deconstructing politics and the media.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there's a lot of other pieces of that puzzle. But and it was late and probably too little too late. But I also think there's a generation of reporters, many of them in print, who grew up listening to and watching Jon Stewart. And you saw in the campaign calling, I won't use the four-letter word, on Trump and Hillary at times in a straightforward way that maybe wouldn't exist without Jon Stewart.
Yeah, good point. And now there are spinoffs like John Oliver and Samantha Bee. Colbert started as a spinoff. So is the new
Trevor Noah, I mean, he's found his direction in a lot of ways. And that's one of the reasons John was able to leave the show at the time he did, is because he felt, and this is not his main purpose in life, but he had created a sort of satire empire that survives him.
Could there be a conservative Daily Show?
I don't think so. They, you know, they're not funny people. I'm sorry.
The opinion of Chris Smith, with a foreword by Jon Stewart himself in this new book, The Daily Show, The Book, An Oral History, as told by Jon Stewart, the correspondents, staff, and guests. Chris, thank you so much.
Thank you, Brian.